Sample Test 2. Part A. Spot Dictation. In different countries, different conventions apply to the process of job application and interviews. In most parts of the world, it's common to submit a typed CV or resume. This contains all the unchanging information about you: your education, background, and work experience. This usually accompanies a letter of application, which in some countries has to be handwritten, not typed. A supplementary information sheet containing information relevant to this particular job may also be required, though this is not used in some countries. Many companies expect all your personal information to be entered on a standard application form. Unfortunately, no two application forms are alike, and filling in each one may present unexpected difficulties. Some personnel departments believe that the CV and application letter give a better impression of a candidate. Interviews may take many forms in business today, from the traditional one-to-one interview to panel interview, where several candidates are interviewed by a panel of interviewers, to deep-end interviews, where applicants have to demonstrate how they can cope in actual business situations. Moreover, the atmosphere of an interview may vary from the informal to the formal, and from the kindly to the sadistic. Fashions seem to change quite rapidly in interview techniques, and the only rules that applicants should be aware of may be: expect the unexpected, and be yourself. In different countries, different trades, and different grades, the salary that goes with a job may be only part of the package. Perks like a company car or cheap housing loans, bonuses paid in a 13th month, company pension schemes, generous holidays, or flexible working hours may all contribute to the attractiveness of a job. Part B. Listening Comprehension. Passage 1.
Is it true, Mr. Northfield, that Flaxco intends to close down even more of its European plants?
I'm not sure what you are getting at. How do you come to ask such a question? Who's mentioned any closures of plants in the first place?
Well, put it another way, then. Are European operations going to be reduced along the lines of recent years? I mean... Is it true that Flaxco has taken over several companies abroad, particularly in the USA, and has even expanded its workforce there?
There are a number of developments about which you seem to get confused, if I may say so.
A large number of jobs have been lost, though, at your European plants.
Look, let me try and put things into perspective for you. I'll give you some facts first of all. Our production resources have been concentrated steadily over the past few years. So now we have focused our manufacturing facilities in Europe, but not only here.
After closing down two plants in Antwerp and Leeds.
Please, let me continue. we have limited our production to certain medicines which are prescribed in large quantities. At the same time, and this appears to be something you've neglected to mention, we have been expanding our marketing activities abroad.
Have you any plans to increase the workforce here in Europe, Mr. Northfield? I'm sure many people would be keen to hear what you have to say on the subject.
I really must insist once more that it's impossible to view the performance of the company, and I'd like to stress the very successful performance of the group over the past few years, solely from the point of view of Europe. Indeed, it would be stupid to do so. I mean, we have nearly two-thirds of our workforce in subsidiaries and associated companies overseas.
Is it true that it wasn't always like that?
As I was saying, we have 60% of our employees involved outside of Europe. That gives you an indication of how international we have become.
Could I ask you another question concerning the R&D expenditure of the group? Is this going to be made in Europe or around the world?
Again, I can only repeat what I've been saying. We are an international corporation, and we have a research facility in Italy, which, as you know, is very important. Furthermore, we have just started a new research unit in the USA, which is inevitable given the large size of our operations in that country and the expansion of our market share there in the past 6 or 7 years.
1. How many of Flaxco's European plants have closed down?
2. Where do most of Flaxco's employees work?
3. Who is Mr. Northfield, most probably?
4. Which of the following statements is true according to the interview?
5. Where does the interview most probably take place? Passage 2. Hong Kong. Hong Kong police seized 42.5 kilograms of drugs and smashed a dangerous drug manufacturing factory yesterday. Police officers arrested 3 suspects, 2 men and 1 woman, in a flat in Kowloon City where the drugs with a market value between Hong Kong $500,000 and Hong Kong $1 million were seized. Some drug manufacturing equipment was also found on the scene. Durban. Violence in South Africa's Zulu heartland is reaching a crisis point and poses a major threat to the country's infant democracy, political analysts say. Police reported on Thursday that 90 people have been killed in the past week alone. Victims shot or hacked to death by night were discovered the following morning. Over 400 people died violently in September. Police say it is often hard to distinguish political from criminal killings, but with the death toll standing at 15 people per day in the province, analysts say anarchy and violence are now threatening stability in the country.
Fort Walton Beach, Florida. The remnants of Hurricane Opal scattered across the northeastern United States and eastern Canada yesterday as rescue teams searched islands off the Florida coast for residents whose whereabouts were unknown. Opal, which disintegrated on Thursday as it raced north after landing in Florida, is believed to be responsible for up to 21 deaths, including as many as 11 in the United States and 10 in Mexico. The storm left hundreds of thousands of people without electricity in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. Downed trees and power lines forced the closure of schools and many businesses in Atlanta as the city struggled to cope with flooded creeks, rivers, and streets. As residents and disaster workers began a massive cleanup from the third hurricane to hit the Florida area this year, officials say up to 24 people who may have decided to wait out the storm on the exposed barrier islands, who may have decided to wait out the storm on the exposed barrier islands off the Florida coast are unaccounted for. Emergency management officials said searchers, including local authorities, the U.S. military, and special search and rescue teams, were combing devastated areas of Okaloosa Island, Holiday Isle, and the town of Destin. According to a preliminary estimate by the Insurance Information Institute, Opal caused $1.8 billion in damage to insured property in Florida alone. The storm's toll was certain to rise when estimates were made in Georgia, where 45 counties were declared disasters areas by Governor Zell Miller and other affected states. The Red Cross said 197 shelters were running, serving more than 31,000 victims in five states.
6. Which of the following statements is not true according to the first item of news?
7. How many people have been killed in South Africa's Zulu heartland in September?
8. How many people are reported to have died so far in Hurricane Opal?
9. Which of the following states has not been hit by the hurricane?
10. Which of the following statements is not true about Hurricane Opal?
3. Okay. Now, it's most important that you listen very carefully to what I'm going to tell you. There isn't much time. You need to know a set of simple signals that you make by standing in a certain way or scratching your ear, for example. That way, you can communicate with a contact even when it's not possible to speak. Let me see what they are. Ah, yes. Okay, if we start with the legs. If you stand with your legs crossed, it's a signal for your contact to leave the message at the drop, that is, whatever secret hiding place you've arranged. Then, if you stand on one leg, which can be a bit difficult if there's nothing to lean on, it means, I'm going home now. Have you got that? Not difficult, is it? Now the arms. Standing with both arms behind your back means, I can't pass the message now. If you scratch your head, that's a question, and it's asking if your contact can meet you at the hiding place you've arranged. If you scratch the back of your neck, on the other hand, it's a warning, and it means, be careful, you're being watched. Be careful to make it clear just what you're scratching. Scratching your ear means, you'll telephone later. Right? So far, so good. There are only two more, and they're easy. If you stand with both feet on the ground and both hands in your pockets, it means yes. One hand in your pocket means no. Now, tell me what the signals are, from the beginning.
11. Standing with your legs crossed makes a signal. What does it mean?
12. Standing on one leg makes another signal. What does it mean?
13. If one stands with both arms behind his back, what does it mean?
14. Which of the following signals can be used to mean yes?
15. How many signals are being talked about here?
Passage 4.
Well, Charles, I must say that your shop is pretty remarkable. It's basically a sweet shop, but you also do stationery and greeting cards and tobacco and fireworks.
And newspapers.
I mean, is there anything you don't sell?
Yes, shoelaces. I haven't got round to shoelaces yet.
But you've had some requests for that.
One or two, but I tend to send them into the shop next door.
Ah, and apart from all that, you've got photocopiers.
That's right.
Two.
Yes.
And a fax machine.
Indeed.
Yes. Why the photocopiers?
Everything that's happened in my shop has almost happened by accident. But when I got into Clifton, I needed a photocopy one day, and no one could tell me where to go. So it struck me that if I didn't know where to go, other people were in the same situation. So that's why I started it. And I had one, and it was an old machine. And then I got two, and now they're better, and they enlarge and they reduce in size. And then I added on a facsimile machine, because it seemed like a natural progression at the time. And all sorts of people use it.
Yes, who? What sort of people do use it?
A lot of professional people, surveyors, engineers, particularly people who need to send plans. Because in the past, you could send messages via telex. But a telex can't express a plan, whereas facsimile has that dimension, the added dimension.
Right. And do people send these fax messages abroad, or is it just to this country?
Well, it's surprising, because when I started, I thought I'd be sending things to London, and maybe Birmingham. But, in fact, a high percentage of it sent abroad, because it's immediate. It's very speedy.
And how much would it cost, for example, if I wanted to send a fax to the United States?
Well, a fax to the United States would cost you £5 for a page. And when you think that in England, by the Royal Mail, it would cost you £12 to send a page by special delivery, it's actually good value.
Okay, what about your hours? How long do you have to spend actually in the shop?
Well, the shop is open from, essentially from 8 in the morning until 6 at night, 6 days a week, and then a sort of fairly flexible morning on a Sunday. And of those hours, I'm in it quite a lot.
And how long have you actually had the shop?
I started to have my shop in 1982, the 22nd of December. Oh, sorry, the 22nd of November. It sticks in my brain.
And did you enjoy it?
Yes. Overall, I enjoy it. Running a business by yourself is jolly hard work, and you never quite like every aspect all the time. 95% of the customers I love. 2%, I really, I'm not too bothered about. And 3%, I positively hate.
What? What's the problem with those? Are they people who stay around and talk to you while you're busy, or complain, or what?
It's hard to categorize, really. I find people who are just totally rude, unnecessary, and I don't really need their custom. And I suppose they form the volume of the people that I don't like. But it's a very, very, very small percentage.
But is there a danger that shops like yours will disappear more and more?
I think there's a very, very great danger that the majority of them will disappear.
Why is that?
Simply because costs of running a shop have just become very, very high. To give you some example, in the time that I've been here, my rent has quadrupled, my rates have doubled, other costs have gone up proportionately. And at the end of the day, it is a little bit hard to try and keep up with those costs. Certainly you can extend the volume of your sales, but they don't necessarily always catch up with the costs. But, having said that, there will always be successful, smart shops. So I hope that I'm in that category.
Yes, and is there anything, do you think anything can be done to stop this trend?
Yes, change the government.
That's what it comes down to.
I'm afraid that's what it comes down to.
16. Why did he first buy a photocopying machine?
17. Where are a lot of fax messages sent to?
18. What's the advantage of sending a fax compared with using the Royal Mail?
19. How many days a week is the shop open?
20. Which type of customers does he particularly dislike?
Part C. Note-taking and gap-filling.
Britain's system of education is not easy to summarize. This is because there are relatively few laws governing how children are educated. The day-to-day running of schools is mainly organized by local education authorities, boards of governors, and the individual head teachers. Britain is divided into a number of local government areas. Local government is responsible for providing a number of services, such as hospitals, the maintenance of roads, the police force, and education. The local education authority is responsible for providing schools and pays for them with money from central government and with money raised from local taxes. Every state school has a board of governors. This board is made up of representatives of the local education authority, teachers, and parents. They decide on the policies of their school and have some control over the selection of teacher and other staff. Within the school, the head teacher, sometimes called the headmaster or headmistress, is in charge of the teaching and administration and often leads school assemblies and other meetings of the school. There are certain laws which all local education authorities and schools have to obey. All children should attend full-time education between the ages of 5 and 16, and this education should be free, unless parents choose to send their children to a private school. All schools should provide religious instruction, though parents have the right to refuse to allow their children to attend. All schools should provide education in certain basic subjects, mathematics, English and science, as well as history, geography, technology, music, art, physical education, and, at secondary schools, a foreign language. Everything not covered by these laws is decided by the local education authority and the head teacher. There are many different types of school in England and Wales. However, schools fit into three main systems. The comprehensive system. The majority of children, about 93%, go to state schools, schools which are run by the state, through the local education authority, and which do not charge school fees. Of these children, more than 90% go to schools in the comprehensive system. Introduced in the 1960s, Fareham Community College, the school in this program, is a comprehensive school. Children go to a primary school at the age of 5. Depending on the policy of the local education authority, they may go directly to the upper school, usually called the comprehensive school, at the age of 11 when they begin their secondary education. Alternatively, they may spend some time at a middle school before going to the upper school. The comprehensive system is non-selective. This means that all children go from one school to another without taking any exams and without being selected according to their abilities. The selective system. A small number of local education authorities still provide a type of selective education, a system which was originally introduced in 1944. Under the selective system, all children go to a primary school until the age of 11. They then take the 11-plus examination. Those who pass continue to a grammar school, where they receive a more academic education. Those who fail go to a secondary modern school where they receive an education which is vocational rather than academic. It is intended to train them for a job when they leave at the age of 16. The private system. Only 7% of the children go to private schools. There are three levels of private school: pre-preparatory schools, preparatory schools, and public schools. In order to gain entrance to public schools, children leaving preparatory school have to pass an examination known as Common Entrance. Many preparatory and most public schools are boarding schools. The children live at the school during the school terms. Even within one geographical area or one of these three systems, there can be a wide variety of schools. For instance, all boys schools, all girls schools, mixed schools, and voluntary schools. Voluntary schools often have a religious background, such as Roman Catholic or Church of England schools. These are usually paid for from public money but founded by a voluntary organization.
Part D. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. Over the last 12 months, sales fluctuated considerably, reaching a peak of around 50,000 units at the end of 1999.
2. It's true that not all commercials are good, but a lot of them are very interesting and very amusing, and some of them are even more interesting than the programs.
3. All the time they're making new weapons, and eventually there are going to be so many weapons around that someone's going to start using them. It's inevitable.
4. The forest fire has been continuing for 2 days in southern France, and firemen from 6 different towns have been fighting all day to prevent the fire from spreading further.
5. What I like about police is the way they're so helpful, the way they can always find time to help you when you need directions, if you're lost or something.
2. Passage Translation.
1. The second thing we have to discuss today is pricing. When you go into the French market, you need to consider how you're going to price your product, and there are two main issues that need to be looked at. 1. Is what your competitors are pricing their product at, because you cannot price your market 3 or 4 times the price of your competitors. The second issue is that all of these product modifications, as you said, cost money, and you need to factor in the extra costs. So typically, an American product selling in the French market might be priced at about 125% of U.S. price or more.
2. From my experience of working in the UK and in Germany, I'd like to make some comparisons based on the differences I've noticed. Firstly, the level of language skills is different. I was very much impressed at the way in which most executives in the German company could not just speak English very well, but read it and write it and communicate effectively, compared with the very poor language abilities displayed by my English colleagues. Secondly, there are also significant differences in the approach of doing business. Germany is much more formal in the way that people conduct business. For example, there is very little use of first names, but more handshakes. It's a custom that's almost withered away in Britain, but in Germany, it's quite correct to greet people in the morning with a handshake.